welkom bij de She Biohacks podcast. Ik ben je host Dominique de Ruiter. In deze podcast combineer ik mijn twee grootste passies, biohacking en vrouwgerichte zorg. Laat je meenemen in verdiepende en inspirerende gesprekken met experts uit het veld. Neem controle over je eigen lichaam en upgrade je leven door gebruik te maken van vrouwgerichte biohacking tools. Let's begin!
Hi Anne, I'm really excited for this conversation, so let's dive right in. Your tagline is literally healthcare for the future. So how do you fill that in concretely? Like, what is your opinion of the healthcare for the future?
I think when we established Nordic Laboratories in 1997, in November it was, we had come across, Mike, the co-founder, and I had come across people in the health industry who were thinking in a different way than general doctors. They were thinking more in a preventative way and in a more like holistic way. They were using phrases such as food is medicine, like the old Hippocrates saying. And I think that impacted us, the people that we met. I mean, we were very young, Chris and myself, when we started the company, and maybe naive, for sure, and no experience for sure. And we had to lean up against people who truly had experience within this. But I don't think there was any doubt in how we wanted to work with our lives. I had always been interested in health, sport, nutrition, mindfulness, all these things. So it came as a natural thing for me to work with laboratory tests, nutritional supplements, lifestyle, etc. So the tagline healthcare for the future came a little bit later when we had more experience. And basically because we had then already by then experienced that some of the biomarkers that we were working with were becoming more and more approved with time, so that some of the things that we were looking into and trying to investigate and understand with the lab tests that we were offering, suddenly we could see that other people were speaking about it as if it was like a more established, as an established thing. So lactose intolerance, celiac disease, or non-celiac gluten sensitivity, things like that. So in a way we were working with things, but there wasn't like this acceptance. So it kind of came out of that, like, okay, we're really working with something, but right now it's maybe not that approved or accepted, but in the future it will be. And also a lot of the prevention, longevity, health optimization is healthcare for the future, as opposed to treating a disease or a diagnosis. That's not healthcare for the future. That is sick care right now, and fixing that thing if possible. So there's different terms and understandings around the healthcare for the future. But for sure, it's taking responsibility for your own health and making yourself the CEO of your health. That, of course, are things that goes underneath that tagline, you can say.
Yes, that's beautiful. And do you see like a change throughout the years? Like you started Nordic Laboratories when? In
1997.
Now we're in 2026 already.
Yeah. 30 years.
Do you see changes? Do you see like a positive change throughout like medicine, functional medicine versus the traditional form of medicine? What are you observing also as a company, but also as a person?
Yeah, there's lots of signs. To begin with, we had to explain a lot what is functional medicine, what is preventative medicine. We kind of had to convince people what we were doing was the right thing. But with time, suddenly I could see, because I work as a practitioner as well and see patients and have been seeing patients throughout all these years. And obviously, sometimes my patients are in contact with a GP or a doctor. And to begin with, there was a lot of like push against what we were doing, but that suddenly changed. And there was more and more, I've heard about that. It sounds really exciting. And okay, yeah, let's do that and work with that. And it became more of like a collaboration in a way, but also an acceptance that, okay, this functional medicine, preventative medicine, it's here. It's just not sick care. But it's working with healthy people and adjusting lots of, obviously we can work with people who has a diagnosis as well. That's not the thing, but it's just working outside the framework and the boxes that the established health system or sick care system works with. So I think it's that moving more like, oh, now they understand a little bit more what it's about. A lot of doctors actually do biohacking on themselves. That there's a trend that they're looking into this on the side of what their framework is in their everyday work. So through time, there's this involvement of more understanding. Also, a lot of research is supporting, like, how do you prevent different diseases, et cetera. And it's some of those things that's built into functional medicine and what we do.
Yes. And when I was like, I think I was 21 or something, I started like reading about the term like biohacking. It was more like an American term. Yeah. And nobody heard from biohacking. I'm from quite a little village. I'm here in the south of the Netherlands, but nobody heard of the term biohacking, but still I can see like a differentiation between like the USA, also with the innovations they have. Sometimes you can have an opinion about that, like maybe the more extreme biohacking that we see nowadays. Versus like when I see what's happening in the Netherlands, there is like an innovation, but it's going a little bit more slow. I still see like a lot of general practitioners who are not talking about lifestyle or who are not like referring to do like a preventative medicine. How do you experience this also? Because your company is like worldwide, it sends diagnostic testing worldwide. Do you see like differences between countries, between the different regions?
Yeah, it's obviously there's biohacking in the USA, but yeah, there's a lot of biohacking in Finland as well.
Yeah.
So in Europe, for sure, biohacking started in Finland by Finns and evolved from there. And then it's in different cities and different countries. And now biohacking has become a thing that kind of everybody knows. But throughout the years, yeah, there's been trends like that was actually also a lot in Scandinavia, a lot of focus on thyroid and healthy thyroid, and then it's a trend for that country, and then there's another country that has a different trend where it's really highly focused on gut, etc. So there are some patterns. I can even see it in my own clinic, like depends on like a little bit like so then we had a lot of kids with like autistic traits and ADHD and parents, because there was a lot in the media around this, like how kids could possibly get some of their autism symptoms ameliorated via diet and lifestyle. So a lot of focus was there. And then suddenly that changed because in Denmark there was like a political push against it, and politicians suddenly didn't want to support it, but for a period they actually did support some research around kids with behavioral issues and neurodivergence. Then suddenly it moved into more purely gut focus, and people needed help with their gut and IBS, and then that was the big thing. And then now it's like hormones is taking up a lot of, so there's obviously a lot of like societal awareness that drives a trend as to what's being investigated as to, all this with hormones, the last 5 years in the media, there has been a lot of awareness. Even in Denmark, they have changed some of the gynecologist guidelines as how to treat women in menopause, etc., with hormone replacement therapy. So obviously, when there's a lot in the media, people are reading and they start, oh, can I get help for this issue that I have in my body? So a lot, of course, depends on what's in the media. There's a focus on mold in houses, wet, damp buildings, etc. Then, of course, there's markets that are evolving. So, I mean, as we are growing, we're also coming into more countries because we're a global company that's supplying laboratory tests to every country basically in the world, if shipping, etc., and logistics allow. So there's countries that are opening up for this, and it has been very closed and not something that has been on the agenda. Maybe there's been some language difficulties, or there's been some political issues where the countries have been closed down and hasn't had the same possibility to collaborate with European countries, stuff like that. And then suddenly we've got a market or a country that's opening up, and it has to be evolved and developed, and we have to support with education, etc. So there's a lot of market trends that we need to follow. And honestly, sometimes we create those trends as well as a company, because we go out and say, this is interesting. Okay, we need to work on Lyme's disease, Borrelia, Epstein-Barr virus, just to mention some that's very specific area, but where we are kind of like, this needs to be, there needs to be more awareness around that. And we take that on board and try to create the education and create awareness to at least the people that we have in around us and our customers, etc., so that we can create trends as well, mm-hmm. as well as there is societal trends, and then obviously like the biohacking trends, etc. So yeah, lots of impact, and it's really exciting.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And I see, like, you were talking about, like, becoming the CEO of your own health. I think that is where we are going. I think that is where we're going worldwide, to more like your own responsibility for your own health, and less like the, like, someone has to take care of me. Maybe when you started, that was more like the idea of health, like the doctors coming and save me, versus now we are more aware, and we have far more knowledge about how our health or how our lifestyle influences our health. So you do a lot with diagnostic testing, like gut tests, genetic testing, hormonal testing, blood work, etc. So can you tell us a little bit more about the role of diagnostic testing in maybe the healthcare for the future? Like, how is it? What is the strength of diagnostic testing? For our health.
Yeah. So I'll just give a little bit of a brief intro, because when we started, there was no, how can you say, laws around this. And actually, a lot of our tests are not specifically diagnostic tests. They are health tests. They are looking into biochemical processes, but it's not a diagnosis. We can look at genes, or we can look at biomarkers, and it doesn't say that it's a diagnosis. It's just saying that this is how your body works. It's within a normal framework, but we are health optimizing. We are creating lifestyle changes because now we understand the foundation and the biochemistry better. So I kind of want to move a little bit away of the
heavy diagnostics. Yeah, of course.
Because we're dealing with health optimization, really.
Functional testing, actually.
Yeah, that's also genetic testing, and then functional medicine testing. Yeah, so those are kind of the, but we use the tests to understand the biochemistry and to impact lifestyle considerations as part of an otherwise also like conversation and understanding the individual when there's a practitioner involved in the recommendations for the individual person who's seeking help for their health optimization and preventative journey. Yeah. And it is a journey. I had a patient last week who had been my patient. I don't think I've seen her for about 5 years or so. And then she booked a new time and she said, "And Catherine, I remember 5 years ago you said to me this with health is that it's a journey. And I didn't believe you. I just wanted you to fix me. And of course, you couldn't just fix me because it is a journey. And here I am sitting 5 years later and I'm still seeking out your help because what you taught me back then was so right. And it's not just fix me and then all will be good. This is a journey. Every day there's a new thing that can impact the body. And it can be stress or an accident or life changes, like hormonal, like first we have to create babies as a woman and then we don't have to create babies and we get older and we just have to every day or year or week or there's something we have to consider to optimize the situation that we are in now, that's Danish. So yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure that completely answered your question, but I
really like your answer because I think not for all people, but in most cases, people seek your help because they want to fix something. They want to they have a certain complaint or whatever. But what I like about more like the preventative medicine or the functional medicine era is that when you get greater insight in your biology, when you get greater insight in how your energy system is working, how your physiology is working, how your hormones are working, then you can't unsee it. So you have that awareness. And when you are living your life and when you are going through these different kind of phases, and we all have like phases that are like more neutral, and then we have phases that are really challenging ourselves and our health. So because you have that greater understanding, I think you will be more prone to seek guidance when you need it or when you feel it. And maybe before, I have had clients that were like sitting before me and they had like high glucose, high cholesterol, they were overweight, they had high cortisol, etc. But they didn't even have the awareness that this was harming their bodies. And when you give them the awareness, I think it's also a great motivator to people to come in action. I think a lot of people truly want to be proactive, but they just don't know how to read their body. Do you see the same?
Yeah, you can say some of these lab tests is a little bit like getting an instruction manual.
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay. This is, and sometimes often actually, it's a little bit funny because I remember one case that was so clear. We were visiting a football club and I think the CEO of the club was an old football player and he'd had lots of like injuries throughout his career as a football player. And he did a genetic test and it showed that there was a lot of like, how can you say, injury,
yeah, sensitivity, yeah.
So this way he obviously had been learning through life that he was prone to injuries, and here he sort of kind of got the, oh, this is the reason why. So it was so clear for him that if he got this instruction manual for his players when they were young, they could develop these players in a different way and support their sports career in a healthier way, where the answer is not necessarily train harder, but train smarter.
Yeah.
And actually sometimes it's don't train that much, train less.
Yes.
And by training less, you can push yourself more when it's time to push yourself. So it's this balance of, yeah, getting this information as early in life, that's just a tendency that we don't reach out to get this information until we feel something is hurting,
yes,
or whatever it is. Yeah. But it's nice to know earlier in life. And I'm sitting here, I'm a bit of an old dog or cat or whatever, like 30 years later from when we started. I'm also seeing how the next generation is using the tests exactly that way. They use it a lot earlier in life, and they get experience working with their body and their health in a way. And it's basically a gift learning that early in life, as opposed to learning it when you're in your 50s or 60s or 70s. So the awareness that the biohacker community, that the longevity community, that all that awareness and media focus, etc., is just really helping younger generations to get on this movement earlier. And I really love that.
Yes. Yeah, and I'm just thinking about how can we educate the younger generation to even know about these tests, even have the awareness, because a lot of, maybe it's where I live. I think in the cities it's less, but every time I'm talking to a client about testing, they often don't even know there is so much available for them to test.
And the only way is just really to spread the words, like you're doing now with your podcast, and you're doing with your clients, I'm doing with my clients. I have my kids now. They have obviously been eating very healthy since they progressed, and then gluten-free and dairy-free. And I was just like the mom that it was too much sometimes. But
yeah.
But I can see now I have grown up kids, and they're just the next generation, and they are understanding it because I did what I did. They might have thought I was really embarrassing and annoying, and why would I make this avocado cake or whatever it was that I was doing when the other kids were just getting some bake off or something.
Yeah.
And
why
would they have to stand out and be different from their peers and all that? But I can see now they understand it.
Yes.
And now, obviously, they are out spreading the information with social media and their podcasts and their way of communicating. So
that's
how can I say, the next ring, like when you throw a stone, you get these
rings. So
it's just impacting, and we just have to continue have that voice that we have our responsibility for our own health. It's not someone else. It's not our mother. It's not the doctor. It's not, I mean, we own it. We have to own it, because if we don't own it, then we end up having open heart surgery or whatever it is in the end. And that's when it's too late then. We want to feel great for as long time as possible. Does that mean we always have to live on a stone and never touch anything unhealthy or not have that glass of champagne or a nice piece of chocolate, etc.? No, but it's a question of finding the balance in your life and choosing what's best for you. And sometimes it's best to have that strict lifestyle, because that's just how you were created by your parents or even someone higher up. Mm-hmm. So, but we have to underline that we are responsible for our own destiny, health destiny as well. And then there's those who's lucky who can live to 117 or years old and not do anything, or
the centenarians.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I think they are also maybe figuratively speaking, like starving out, because a lot of the blue zones, they are influenced now with modern societal influences. So I think a lot of the people who are just living a little bit the life of our grandparents, they're not living that anymore. And now you can see when they embrace modern influences, like eating unhealthy, don't move enough. They're inside way too often. then you also see that they get like these modern diseases.
Of course, it's like speaking of like the Mediterranean diet. You have to define what is the Mediterranean diet, because the Mediterranean diet as it is now, it's not the real Mediterranean diet that has that blue zone effect. So obviously that needs to be defined very much as to what is the right diet or the most optimal diet exactly. And it's difficult to learn if you've never learned it. I had a patient yesterday where I had to explain what like processed food is, and like, and she had to go on an anti-inflammatory diet, and she'd done a lot and introduced like lots of vegetables, etc. And she was doing 8-16 intermittent fasting, etc. And then we went through the diet, and she had gone to have some soy yogurt with blueberry and sugar in it, and she had oat milk in her coffee. And I just had to go, well, soy yogurt is processed foods, and it's food that's in a carton that is covered with plastic on the inside. The oat milk is the sugar content in the oat milk. If you've ever been wearing a continuous glucose monitor, then you can see fasting and you have a cafe latte on oat milk, it spikes your blood sugar as if it was like a Coke you were drinking. And that information is highly important. Like she believed she had, and she definitely had done the right move towards something that was better for her. She could feel that her brain fog had lifted, etc. But she could just do it better than what she had already done. So it's that definition of an understanding and like going diving deep into the lifestyle and understanding what's on the shelf and being able to read a label, etc. And I think that window of opportunity in general lies within schools and our education system, but unfortunately they don't think like a biohacker. I mean, imagine a whole school class wearing a continuous glucose monitor for 2 weeks and seeing how they're spiking and going low and how they're reacting to food so that they actually see it with their own eyes.
Yes.
Because you can teach them and educate, oh, the blood sugar goes up when you eat sugar, blah, 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 blah. But if you don't actually see it and you don't, then it's learning theory.
Mm.
And then you can still be blind.
Of course. Yes, so I experience this all the time whenever I have like clients and I think education is a great part of the transformation, also of becoming the CEO of your health. I think education is like one of the most essential factors. But what I have been experiencing is that when I explain for example, the oat milk influences your blood sugar levels, and then you get like a spike, and then you get like a relative hypoglycemia. Now, and that's not good for your health. Really simple stats. That's not good for your health.
Yeah.
They understand, but there becomes a totally different level when they can see their own data. And I also have this with other testing, for example, with like the GI map, for example, with like, I also test with the M-Wave Pro from HeartMath Institute. When people are observing their own physiology, it just does something. Like now it's real. Now I can't look away from this anymore. So,
I got the GI map, my butyrate producing bacteria are low. So I'm probably not producing butyrate enough. Am I getting enough resistant starch? Am I getting enough prebiotic? Am I getting enough fibers in my diet, etc.? Oh, let's work on that. And doing follow-ups is just as important as just doing the one, at least for the functional test where, you know, things are changing. With the genetics, we just do it once and then we have that framework, unless we can measure new genes that keep coming on with more research, etc. But with the functional test, following up to see, okay, so I've changed these things. Has it actually translated into my result that I can see that I have changed the actual microflora, etc.? But is that knowledge that gives you that insight. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and while we're on the subject of educating, like you told us before, like hormones are quite a big thing right now, that the theme of hormones and menopause, perimenopause, etc. So, for example, okay, I see a lot of women who are going to the doctors and then or general practitioner, and then they have like a blood lab testing, and blood lab testing is normal. So how can, for example, help Dutch test help within this case? What is, for example, a Dutch test testing, what has not been seen in this normal blood work?
So specifically for women,
yeah,
and measuring hormones, there's different ways to measure. As you say, there's blood, which is how the doctor normally would do it, and then the Dutch test is this dried urine comprehensive hormone testing. So it's looking also at metabolites. So it's looking at how one is metabolizing, let's say, estrogen. So you get the blood level and that will say this is the level, and it won't say how you're metabolizing. But we know in regards to estrogen, we know that there's different types of estrogen, and basically hormones is one big orchestra that we we're looking into different estrogen types and the metabolites, and some metabolites are healthier and others can possibly create more damage or is less favorable, you can say. And what we focus on is supporting a healthy metabolism of estrogens and getting that, as again, like the instruction manual, as how your body is working. And Do I need to focus a lot of on detox? Do I need to protect my body from too many chemicals? We should all do that. So, but some are perhaps more, a little bit more as a canary in a coal mine, where some people are just more sensitive than others. And with the instruction manual, we get an idea of how we can support the body more so that we feel better. So the thing with doing a Dutch test is it just gives more information that we can work with in regards to supporting a healthy hormonal life.
Yes, and also with like progesterone, I see like the reference range is like so crazy big. Like, even if you have like super low progesterone, it's still within reference. So that's also like crazy. Like the sometimes the reference ranges are so weird. Like they're so not focused on optimal levels for the person. So someone comes back to me and she says like progesterone is okay. It's a little bit low, but it's okay. And then we still don't know anything. We still don't know what estrogen does, how it's being metabolized. We still don't know anything about methylation or cortisol or whatever.
Yeah. So obviously, and again, that's where we have, again, I feel a little bit bad for general practitioners, but we just have to remember that they are working within a framework of diagnosis.
Yeah.
So their reference ranges is very broad, because you can be high on progesterone, you can be low on progesterone, but you're still within the normal curve. So, but as soon as you're outside that, then yeah, it becomes something that they can work with. Yeah. It's a little bit like with gut problems. Well, IBS is not it's just a condition, but it's within normal. It's not until when it's a colitis or a Crohn's or a cancer or a celiac disease, or then it's within their framework. But everything outside that framework is that's where you have to be your CEO of your health, and you have to take responsibility. And obviously that's a lot where we are focusing, because we are focusing on health. Is it optimal? Not necessarily, but then hopefully we can push it towards optimal.
Yeah. And you have so many like tests like if someone is in within the, they have like this awareness, like I want to be the CEO of my health and I really want to optimize my health. What would you like recommend when they haven't done anything? Maybe they have done some like blood lab testing at the general practitioner, but further on they have nothing. What would you recommend like the, maybe the first test? If you can even, if you can even say that, that that would be the first test to do.
Yeah, I can say that it's nice to know your genetics. It's nice to have that understanding of your foundation. This is how I was created. This is what my genes kind of code for, you can say. And having that understanding can then hopefully motivate you in choosing a lifestyle that fits the best and hopefully can move you on in life as the fittest way, you can say. So that I really like genetics as a foundation. In my clinic, most people come because they have a symptom. So we kind of go a different way because we have to fix that problem first. Yes. So that's the motivation. But I always try, my aim is always to try and move people back to understanding the foundation of their life and having that instruction manual to build a healthy lifestyle from. But absolutely, I love genetics. But then moving on from that, another foundational thing is the gut flora. I mean, it's amazing how gut flora actually impacts health and longevity for that matter as well. And there's more and more research evolving. So looking into your gut flora, not necessarily looking at pathogenic like salmonella and what have you, because a healthy person, there's a very little chance risk that they walk around with stuff like that in them. Obviously, we can all get infected or get food poisoning and what have you. But understanding the whole environment of these microorganisms in your gut and supporting them through optimal lifestyle choices, and with or without a stool test, we know that eating the rainbow color foods and making sure you get like some of the popular things I say when I have consultations is like eat with the rainbow, eat 30 different plant-based foods at least per week. Make sure you get like different fermented foods, kraut kimchi, kombucha, kefir, maybe probiotics, etc. Do these things, but understanding your stool through a test drives more motivation. Yeah. and can make you maybe more focused and so there's of course like general information, but then there's specifically in regard what does it look like in my gut. And now I mentioned the butyrate producing bacteria. So I mentioned the butyrate producing bacteria earlier, and understanding if you don't have enough butyrate in your gut, it's a short chain fatty acid that helps the immune function, it helps repair the gut. I mean, it does many things, and you can't, it's not something you eat per se. Obviously, you can take it as a supplement, and there are foods that perhaps can give you a little bit of butyrate, but it's something your gut flora has to produce. So if you really have to be nice to that gut in order for the bacteria to produce compounds that has a health support in your body. So that's basically, it's called postbiotics. So you've got what you feed the bacteria with, the prebiotics, and you've got, and you can have probiotics that you can take as supplements as well. But you've got that bacteria in your stomach, and they are actually a factory, and you can drive the gut so that it supports your health, or you can drive it so that it doesn't support your health. And it's that understanding that really is important to work with throughout life, in all life stages, throughout the life cycle. I mean, even like before you are born, before the baby is born, the mother's gut flora can impact how pregnancy outcomes and the mother's gut flora impacts how she the breastfeeding, how the composition of the milk is for the baby, and actually that drives the immune development in the baby. So the first 1,000 days of a baby's life is some of it is comes from the mother's gut flora, the mother's breast milk. These things are amazing. So, I mean, the more we can do health optimization throughout all life cycles, the better, really.
Yeah, that's amazing. And for example, when you've tested yourself, did you see, like, for example, with if someone needs to use antibiotics, then they will do a gut test. So, and then the gut test will be way more off than usually. How did you see any of this when you're testing yourself? And how many times are you testing, or are you advising to test, for example, the gut test? Because you said it's a lifetime thing. Would you recommend, like, do it once a year, or I don't know?
Yeah, I mean, I regularly do it, maybe not once a year that I do a stool test. Maybe I wish I would. Sometimes I just forget it. But then then I have a lot of focus on hormones. So I'm more tending to, like, look at my hormones a little bit more than but I do a lot. I do a lot of testing. I wouldn't want to be without it. I use it to, yeah, really get insight as to what's the status now. If I feel my stomach is a little odd off, then I would do a test. But obviously, it's so easy for me to do all these tests. But yeah, I've done food intolerance testing, hormone testing, gut testing, mold testing, hair testing to look at minerals and nutrients, urine test also to look at what's called organic acids, which is, again, biomarkers that can indicate, like, cellular health, liver health, nutritional status, indications of, like, nutrients that you need to focus on more than others in your diet, etc. So all that is just really, I mean, then at some stage in my life, I had to look a lot into infections because that was an issue. But then suddenly that happened. Yeah. So throughout my life, God only knows how many tests I've done, and I wouldn't want to be without them, because every single test gives me clues as how to move on, and it gives me inspiration as how to think further, etc. So and it's a little bit what I see, like, it when people start, because it becomes like a Pandora box when people feel, oh my goodness, I'm getting information here that I can use to drive my own health, then they start getting hungry and they want more and more information. And there are the ones that also choose to do a follow-up once a year or once every other year, etc., just to see what is status now, or depending on what goes on in their life, that, oh, now I need to check this. Now this is, I mean, I've got patients who have a yearly consultation with me, and, like, oh, this is what's on my life in my life right now. This is what's going on. All right. Is there any tests that I could to understand my situation a little bit better, then I could move on from that?
Yes.
So,
Have you experienced, like, every time you do a test, like, do you see, like, really big differences between different periods of your life? Have you been, like, experienced sometimes a result that you were like, oh my God, this is so much different than before?
Yeah. I mean, there's patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously there's patterns, because we are who we are. We are the genes. But we are the genes and the environment, and that interaction between the genes and the environment. So there's also like, you get this information, but you can only take X amount of supplements. So you have to prioritize what you need to focus on, etc. But yeah, I mean, I have actually, I just recently, one of these little hacks, like, I've always been low on B6, and no matter how much B6 I took, I couldn't, like, that was just like, that was just a situation in my life. But then recently, and I can't say why exactly, apart from the fact that I think I actually managed to take really high dosages, a little too much, perhaps even, but then suddenly I cracked that cold. And now I'm just taking a lot less. Now I'm just at a maintenance. So that's one of them. But things that are obviously we get infections. So something that I see a lot is this balance with H. pylori, this bacteria that lives in the stomach. It's something that a lot of people are born with. It's a normal bacteria in the society. But there's some trends at the moment where more people are positive, and like it's not that easy to treat it. This is a conversation that I've had with the lab. I've had several patients who's been with their GP. I can't treat with antibiotics. I'm not a doctor. I can't prescribe. So this is where I will have to like work with the GP. And it's seen that at the moment that it's more aggressive. Is that because of COVID and vaccines and maybe a compromised immune system because of that that's happening globally? I have no idea. And that's just a trend. And it could be from more awareness or whatever it is. But there's just things that I see that are changing that we have to. But there's also, based on literature, things that are changing. Things that where we thought, well, oh, you've got this parasite. Oh, let's treat it. Let's get rid of it. You need to get rid of it. It's a bad thing. But now the research actually says, well, there's parasites that just shows that if people are carriers of those parasites, they have a much more diverse bacterial flora in their gut. So it doesn't necessarily need to be treated. It's actually just part of the normal flora in a way. So we just have to be open for new research, open for understanding that things are changing, and having that, be prepared for change.
Yeah.
And be prepared to what you thought or learned then is not necessarily right now. Now there's new research, we understand it in a different way, and not be stuck in what we learned, but actually be willing to, and now you use the unlearn, actually be willing sometimes to unlearn. Yeah. Or unseen, you said that. So, but what you've learned, sometimes you have to unlearn it because new research is coming. And sometimes you have to go the other way around. You have to learn, obviously, all the time. But what you learned, you have to look at it in a different perspective. And I think that's where working with lab tests helps you, because you have to be like wanting to educate yourself and wanting to understand and look out for trends, etc. So lots of things are changing, both when I do testing on myself, but also trends that I see and patterns that I see with patients. But yeah, there are patterns. So let's say we were looking at organic acids. Some of these biochemical pathways are related to your genes. And if you have genes where the combination of genes that you inherited from your parents kind of like codes that there's some differences in, let's say, the methylation pathways, just to use that, a bit of a trendy area that a lot of people are learning about at the moment. And then, you can't really, that's the way your genes are, but then you can impact the environment so that the expression of your genes, hopefully you can ensure you take enough activated folate, or that you get enough B12, or that you get enough B6, and you can support it that way. Make sure you get enough protein, dietary protein in for the methionine cycle, etc. So there are definitely trends, but over time, when you are working with the individual person, there are some changes, and step by step, you move into more health optimization, you can say.
Yeah, and what I found really funny about my own genetic testing was that I had a little bit of a predisposition for the evening type. And that's so funny, because I'm like, everybody says like, you're like the most morning type I've ever seen. But that's the funny part, like genetics can give you the fundamentals of your like your blueprint. But then what you were telling me just now was that the influences of lifestyle has an impact, of course, on your genetics, but it's really nice to know. For example, I learned this at the Dutch summit. I was thinking about like that, like with the patients or the clients they had, that, for example, they were like really sensitive for celiac disease. So that's really nice to know, because when you are like, for me, I trained myself to become, I think, a morning person by waking up like since childhood really early. But for example, if you have someone and she has a genetic predisposition for like a celiac disease or gluten sensitivity, and she from her diet, she's only consuming like gluten rich foods, then she will be so far off in comparison to someone who's eating gluten and has no genetic predisposition whatsoever. So it's still really nice to know. And what would you say, like, you have like the genetic testing, you've like, for example, Dutch testing, you have like the GI map or the microbiome testing, you have the organic acids testing. Like, how would you, like, when you want to have like an insight in your physiology, how can people differentiate between which one is for them?
Well, first of all, they are all for them.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
They are. But it's a question of where their interests are. If there's some inherent, like some disease in the family, that will then guide them as to what is interesting for them. Or again, where are you in your life cycle? Are you wanting to understand your hormones? Do you have polycystic ovary syndrome, for example, which is not that it's MOS now.
Yeah, it's true.
About learning new things.
Yeah. Unlearning. Yeah.
So that PCOS is more a metabolic thing than it's something that about cysts on your ovaries, but it's actually much more driven by your metabolism and your like carbohydrate intake and like your insulin resistance, etc. So, but learning. So it's more, I tend, when I have people and support people, I go for where their motivation is, and that's where we start. Sometimes I had a patient yesterday who like, she wanted a Dutch test, and I was like, let's wait with that. Let's do a stool test right away. It's not that I don't want you to do the Dutch test, but there's some things you have to do before you do the Dutch test. And it's sometimes with like, because here I'm changing her motivation. And I've seen it countless times that when I don't kind of support them in their motivation, then sometimes I'm more lose them, because that's not where their interest was. It was the hormones they wanted checked. And then I say, well, let's check your stool. And then, so I'm always aware when I do this, and because then some maybe they lose, oh, well, she didn't hear what I was saying, etc. I always try and explain it. But all tests is relevant, but it has a cost.
Yeah.
So, And the patient has to be, and I keep calling them patients, but they're not necessarily sick or anything.
Okay. Clients,
yeah. What do they want to spend their money on? What's their motivation? What drives them? How can I support them? What makes sense in my framework as to where I should drive them? So all the tests that you mentioned, both organic acids, to give a more like a nutritional, cellular health status, the hormones to understand that depending on where you are, if you are young with acne or PMOS or endometriosis, or then both gut and hormones can be relevant, and you have to do two tests, and then you've got the foundation and the genetics. It's all relevant. It's just a question of when can you afford to do it? When do you prioritize doing it? Because it's not always people can afford it, but they need to do it. So it's that balance as well.
Yeah. Do you think these tests will in about 10 years or 15 years be covered by insurance? Do you think there? Do you have an idea about it, or do you have another idea about healthcare?
Honestly, I have no idea. I've had meetings with insurance companies who really wants to, and there are some insurance companies that actually has covered, but it's very, very poor. I've had meetings with insurance companies where they really want to have it on as part of their offering to their customers. But when it comes, it's like they don't really want to pay for it. So they want to say that they're offering it, but they don't really want to pay the price. So I think it's still early days to say what happens in 10 years. My gut feeling is that maybe there will be some insurance companies that agree, but generally the general insurance company probably won't do it, and you will have to pay a premium fee in order to get it covered. And then at the end of the day, you are still paying for it yourself. So,
yeah, of course. And I think the conventional healthcare is becoming so expensive already that maybe people will be, I don't know, more motivated if they have to pay anyway. I think that's a little bit the same in the USA. They have to pay anyway, so why not pay for functional testing instead of conventional healthcare, or as I like to say, conventional medicine.
Yeah. There is definitely, I mean, another thing that has changed throughout the years was why the question came up, why don't these tests get paid through the government? But now people know they don't really get offered there, and they know it's so. Again, that's a trend where people know that if they want to do this, it's them, it's their motivation. They're the CEO, they're the driver in order to not end up in sick care area.
Yeah, of course. And it's information. Like if you go to a conventional healthcare practitioner, they can give you like medication sometimes it can be like for a good cause. But with these test results, if you get a test result, then you have to get an action yourself. That is like the CEO of your own body. So I think people have to make that choice in their minds even before they will go and testing, because if they aren't aware or not motivated to do anything, why would they even bother to pay for tests like these?
Yeah, exactly. There has to be a motivation for doing it, and an understanding and some form of like previous education that their mind is set up for this type of treatment strategies, as with so many other like manual therapy, massage, chiropractor, and things like that. People have to be motivated to do that as well. So
it's true. I want to thank you so much for this conversation. Is there anything you wanted to say to the audience?
Well, just that once people dive into this and they actually see that it's making a difference in their lives, make sure to spread the word. Without this information, we don't get to spread the word on optimal prevention and optimal health in life. So be honest and share your journey. Tell other people how you feel, how it helped you to motivate others in getting healthier through their lives.
Yes. And where can people find you more of Nordic Laboratories?
Yeah, well, the challenge is that we are not like, we don't, our customers is practitioners. So you can always reach out.
Find me.
Thank you. So obviously you can reach out to us and we can guide you to a practitioner, but really most people come through a practitioner. So maybe Google someone like you, a functional medicine practitioner, or someone who's using stool tests or hormone tests, and find us that way.
That's a good one. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.